The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to Vox Markets. I am John Heumann, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by a very special guest and a new colleague, in fact. We'll come on to why in a minute, but welcome David Thornton to Vox.
Thanks, John. Very good to be here. Very good to have you as a new colleague.
Yeah, it's very good to have you. And the reason I say we're now colleagues is that Vox is relaunching a growth company investor, which David has been a part of for many years. David, perhaps for the benefit of Vox readers and listeners, none of whom I'm sure are not familiar with growth company investor, but do remind us what it is, what you've been doing with it for many years, and sort of where you came from to get to the point where you edited this this publication. For quite some time.
Sure. Yeah, no, sure. Well, where I came from, I was a fund manager for 30 years, mainly doing UK equities, although I spent 4 years doing the US market, which was really interesting, really pleased I was able to do that. And latterly, I spent 6 years managing an Eastern European emerging markets fund. So quite a range of background, but all equities. But as I said, most of my time was spent managing UK stocks and mainly at Henderson, or Janus Henderson as it is now. But I left fund management about just over 10 years ago and became a financial journalist, I suppose. I started editing a small cap newsletter for a publication which is part of the Money Week empire. And then back in 2015, I took on editing Growth Company Investor. And actually acquired the title about 3 or 4 years ago. And it was essentially a monthly publication for subscribers focused entirely on small caps, UK small caps, which is an area I've invested in myself on a personal basis for many decades. And I, you know, particularly enjoy looking at, you know, I love talking to companies and, you know, looking at the, you know, some of the less familiar and slightly more obscure names in the market, which are you know, were always relatively under-researched, and I think nowadays are extremely under-researched, and you know, therein lies plenty of opportunity and plenty of interest, I think, for the private investor.
And I guess that's, you know, that is the whole ethos of GCI, and why you know, we've now taken it within the Vox stable, is that as you say, now, there is a huge pool of companies out there, of small companies, very few of which are particularly well covered, both by analysts and journalists. It's increasingly difficult for small companies to get coverage, and I think that's something that we want to rectify. And you've been sort of tackling that problem for some time.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's right. I think some of the sort of longer established stocks, you know, may still have you know, a handful of brokers following them, but the vast majority, particularly companies on AIM, you know, usually only followed by the you know, by the Nomad, the you know, the corporate broker. And you know, so you know, their research there tends to be basically just a mouthpiece for you know, for the company's management. You know, outside of an RNS, it's where you communicate the management's guidance as far as earnings forecasts and so on are concerned. But you know, you get very little critical or you know, independent sort of views expressed in that. I mean, that's not to knock Nomads. I mean, they're, you know, they're doing their job. They have a specific role. You know, post MiFID and going back even further, Big Bang, you know, it's very hard for stockbrokers to make money out of writing independent research, particularly on smaller companies. There's just no incentive for them to do so. So it's a real problem, I think, for the UK capital market. And smaller companies in general, but it provides, you know, an information opportunity for, you know, for private investors looking at companies which are just too small for stockbrokers and too small in many cases for institutional investors to get involved with.
So when you say information opportunity, the fact that there isn't, you know, a lot of research on some of these companies means that there's potentially mispricing, and mispricing that that means they're essentially too cheap. And I guess that's what we are going to be looking for as we roll this out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there are two types of managements, aren't there? People are running capital hungry, early stage businesses who want to talk the story up. And then there are the more mature, established businesses where actually it pays for management to keep a lid on expectations and then beat them. You know, that's part of the game, and that leads to having a good reputation and a decent share price. So if you were to just glance at, do a quant screen of for stock ideas, and you're looking at broker forecasts. If you've just got one forecast, and it's from the Nomad, and management have asked them to keep it very conservative, so we're looking at very little growth and so on, you're just not really going to take that any further because it just looks very boring. Whereas actually, if you spend a little bit more time and dig beneath the surface, maybe have a chat to management, get some qualitative spin on those possibly misleading quant numbers, that's where you can, just by taking that bit of extra time, going those extra few yards, not even an extra mile, you can actually uncover some very good companies which are overlooked and not fully appreciated.
Yeah, perhaps it was through your research process you talked about there, about screening, about management interviews. What is the process? What is the sort of the most valuable elements of the way you go about, trying to find these hidden gems that you think, investors should pay attention to?
I'm very much, I've got to phrase this carefully here. I'm very much a growth-oriented person because, a firm believer that you own equities for growth. And even if you happen to maybe buy a stock at the, possibly too high a price, or when the stock market's riding high, if it's growing, then, time will bail you out. You own equities to grow, for growth. You own a stock because you want it to be a bigger company. You expect it to be a bigger company in 5 years' time than it is today. So in that respect, I'm more of a growth investor than a, so-called value investor. We can think we've found a pound note and we're only paying 80p for it. Well, that's great. But if the pound isn't growing, then we're just got to hope that that value gets recognized in time, and then we move on. I mean, that's value investing. I've got a lot of respect for, worked with some very good value investors in my time at Henderson, but it's not a mindset that I have particularly. What I'm looking for is growth, but paying a reasonable price for it. Just ignoring a pure growth investor will ignore valuation to a large extent and just go for the growth and, let the valuation take care of itself. I'm much more cautious than that. So I'm looking to pay a fair or preferably cheap price to buy a decent growing company. Now, where I've, going back in my history, looking back over my investment history, where I've made the most money is where I've bought a stock which is, valued very modestly as more of a value stock than a growth stock, where the market isn't expecting very much. But actually, it turns out it's actually a pretty good company, and it gets re-rated and it grows very nicely. And that way you get the double whammy of the growth and a re-rating to sort of turbocharge your returns. Those are the things ideally which you you can identify, and if you hold on to them, they'll do you proud. So it's that combination of growth and paying a right price for it. I mean, the acronym GARP, growth at a reasonable price, I think is a perfectly fair way of thinking about it.
Indeed, and I suppose it won't come as any surprise to hear that I kind of share exactly that philosophy as well. Which I developed over many years as a journalist at the Investors Chronicle and latterly as editor. Wrote a lot of tips in my time, but with that as a sort of fundamental premise behind them. I mean, talking of these sort of GARP opportunities, I mean, it's been a rough old time for small caps and mid caps over the last sort of few years, throughout the sort of inflationary crisis and the cost of living crisis. But presumably that has left lots of opportunity out there on the table. If we'd have launched a month earlier, we'd have probably, found it even easier. There has been a bit of recovery of late, but there's still a lot out there. Sort of, what do you see the prize as? I mean, small cap performances, historically have been very good, and we're at a point where small cap performance could really sort of take off from here.
Yeah, it's very interesting how these things move in cycles. I won't spend too much time on this, but the history of UK small caps, they provided stunning returns from the mid-1950s to the mid-1980s. And that was when, of course, the small cap effect was discovered. Elroy Dimson, who published the academic research on it. And if you go back and look at that, in the mid-50s, small caps were ridiculously lowly valued. And there's PEs of 5 and yields of 7, 8, 9. They weren't regarded as sensible things to invest in. And of course, like most things in investment, when a sort of style gets discovered, it immediately stops working. So small caps then had a very difficult 10 years and then started performing again, purely because they've gone from being very cheap to actually quite expensive. And I think where we've been in the cycle this time round, if you look at the valuations at the towards the end of the last decade, pre-COVID, and then the rebound we had once the market recovered from that before hitting the highs at the end of 2021, rather. If you go back and look at the valuations they got to then, small caps, particularly growth-oriented small caps, got onto very high valuations indeed. You had things like Fevertree selling on PEs of 60, 70 and so on. So you'd had a long period of growth stocks being in favor and getting very expensive. So the market darlings in the small cap area, being hammered as we've been through this bear phase, they've been derated. And on top of that, the rest of the small cap basket has been continued to be spurned by institutional investors. So I think the more growth oriented stocks have become either less expensive or actually quite attractive, depending on how you want to look at them. Whereas the more mainstream solid growth stocks, more value oriented stocks, continue to look extremely cheap. So you're right. I mean, we have had this nice move, much better feel to the small cap world in the last couple of months. And as we were talking earlier, John, if we'd have published our first recommendations a month or so ago, we'd be looking like heroes now. But I think having said that, the wind is still, it has changed. It is now at the backs of investors in this area rather than firmly in their faces, which it has been for the couple of years previously. We had a big low in October. We retested that in March. Most of the charts I look at are very encouraging indeed. We've got long bases and we're starting to see some good moves coming off those bases now. And it's tempting to think, this stock's gone up 20% in the last month or 30% since a March low. But actually, in the context of the underperformance of the last several years, that's a very modest move indeed. I was just looking before we started our chat at just where valuations are in the market. And if you look at the median stock in pretty much any indices in the UK, it's trading on 12, 13 times, small caps slightly lower than that. And that would compare with a long-term average for the UK equity market of something like sort of 14, 15. So we've still got, significant undervaluation at a period when, the general background for earnings is probably slightly improving, certainly not deteriorating. So I think there's still an awful lot to go for, on a short to medium term view, let alone when we think about the opportunity on a longer term view, which is what we should be thinking about when we invest in equities.
So we're going to get hopefully a re-rating plus that growth that you talk about, that sort of rising earnings that the kind of companies, GARP companies that we're targeting are likely to deliver. A lovely sort of a virtuous combination there.
Yeah, the double whammy, hopefully. I think it's important to mention that if we'd have launched these recommendations a month ago, then we'd be looking like heroes. We're not really or we shouldn't be. I don't know about you, John, but I'm certainly not looking to tip stuff that I think is going to go up a lot on a sort of 2 or 3 week view. I mean, I haven't a clue where the market's going on a 2 or 3 week view. And I've never had one in the 40 years I've been investing. I really don't know. It can be a very random walk in the short term. But I think the point is, if you can buy on a single digit multiple or very low double digit multiple, good companies that are growing, that are being sensible stewards of their businesses and of the capital that they're managing on behalf of shareholders, then you will do very well on a 3 to 5 year view. I think it's one big thing I've learned over the many years I've been doing this is that, you know, taking that long-term view is absolutely vital. You know, patience is a virtue. Might not play quite so well with the sort of journalist time frame, John, but you know, in terms of small cap investing in particular, but also equity investing in general, you know, having that 2 to 3 year view, giving your stocks ideas to play out, especially if you're getting on board them at a time when valuations are low, is I'm sure, you know, bound to pay dividends in the literally and figuratively in the
absolutely
in the long term.
No, I quite agree. I'm definitely not one for the short term view. And in fact, yeah, one thing I would say is, you know, some of the companies that I'm likely to be recommending are companies that I've invested in and have been invested in for quite some time. And obviously, we'll make that very clear when we publish anything. But yeah, you know, I've bought in, and valuations have retracted. They've retreated further still in certain companies. Certainly, the first one that I'm gonna publish. But as you say, it's that long view. It's that long term growth potential that I'm interested in. And I rarely trade. I rarely do anything with existing holdings. I don't know what your approach is, but I guess you're as lazy an investor as I am in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I sloth is a virtue in my book. I suppose, like most investors, many investors, I should say, probably most, I find it, I find selling, particularly selling well, quite hard. You know, it's a lot tougher to, I think, sell well than it is to sort of see the upside opportunity. And I guess that's partly because, you know, I'm an optimist by nature, which leads me to invest in equities. But yeah, I mean, it's I think not getting stopping yourself from becoming bored with a stock just because it hasn't done anything for 2 or 3 months, and therefore selling it and moving on to the next big thing is usually a mistake. You know, you should always try and give your stocks plenty of time, your ideas plenty of time to work out, and always ask yourself, actually, you know, is the original thesis still valid, or have things changed, and have I failed to properly pick up those changes? Am I making excuses to carry on holding this stock despite, you know, the narrative having moved away from what I originally thought it was, or the original rationale for investing? So that's always a key thing, I think, to ask yourself. But otherwise, you know, it's always best to, you know, give your ideas plenty of time to work out. You know, timing's hard, but actually appreciating the opportunity is, I think, much less difficult.
Yeah, indeed. And so something that we're going to be doing, so as well as, you know, we're going to provide fairly in-depth pieces of research into new ideas, but then we're not going to sort of fire and forget and never come back to them again. We're going to make sure that we update regularly and keep track of our performance, own our winners as well as our losers.
Well, yeah, that's
there won't be too many of the latter.
when you're investing and certainly when you're managing money professionally, that's what you do. You know, you take your portfolio home with you on a Friday night, and it's there on the Monday morning, and you read the Sunday papers hoping that you won't see a profit warning because you can't you can't hide from it. So I always used to it sounds like I'm sort of knocking journalism here. I'm not. I've actually become one, but it always used to quite irritate me that you found a journalist or even the odd stockbroker would try and disown or quietly forget or walk away from a stock they'd recommended, whereas you actually owned it, warts and all. So now I think it's very important. I mean, you know, obviously, You know, I was, you know, lived my entire life, you know, being measured. And it's actually, it's one of the, I think, really good things about doing investment. You know, you actually have a quantitative output at the end of the day. You know, we can't argue about, you know, the sort of artistic impression or whatever on a portfolio. It's basically, it's done what it's done, and you can't hide from that. So I think that's a very good discipline, and it's important to keep up. When I was writing GCI, I did run a portfolio, which a paper portfolio, which I reported on every month. Just dealt once a month. Most months didn't deal, and you know, measured the performance. And you know, it for the most part, it was actually I'll just spend a second on that, because it ties in well. The first 6 months I ran it, after it had been running 6 months, I launched it in October 2015, and after 6 or 7 months, I was down about 6% or so, probably broadly in line with what the market had done. You know, it was pretty tedious stuff. And then from the middle of 2016, it just went through the roof as the wind changed and became a following one, and small caps did well, and my stock picks did extremely well. So it then had a fantastic run, and then of course we had the ructions with COVID, when the market plummeted in March, April 2019. So you have to sort of, you know, you it's so important to you know, continue to measure and to explain and to try and understand reasonably in real time, you know, what is going on, and how you might react, how you could react, and so on. So I think it's just a very, very important discipline. And it, you know, and yeah, and we, you know, it's one of the joys of investing, is that you never stop learning, you never stop making mistakes, you never stop learning from them.
And the market's changing all the time, and the companies that are within it are changing all the time. There's always plenty to keep abreast of. So we're launching Monday, and on Monday we'll be able to see our first two picks. Let's not give the game away right now, but Dave, perhaps give us a clue as to the first company you've written about, and actually it's an interesting one, because it sort of belies the idea that AIM is full of young, very, very recently established companies. This is a company that's been around for a while.
Yeah, very long established UK manufacturing company, and you know, one which obviously moved from the main market to AIM quite a long time ago. It's a company I've known quite well for a while now. Spoke to management many times, and it became absolutely ludicrously cheap during the traumas of in sort of early 2020, during the traumas of the COVID shock. It got down to a nonsensically low rating, and until the last sort of 6 weeks or so, it's had nothing but upgrades over the last sort of 3 or 4 years. But that's kept the valuation in this sort of low, well, mid single digit area. But it looks to me like the market is beginning to wake up to the stock. It's had a very good move over the last month since I management and
did you send me the report about
and waiting to publish. but it actually, that point ties in with what we've just been talking about. You know, it's this is still a very cheap stock on a single digit multiple. There's a very good case for it achieving a much higher rating over the coming years. The finances and the operating dynamics of the business have been turned around completely, and it's a stock I you know, Le Patron Marge EC, it's a stock which I've owned for quite some time, but I think it's got a potentially has a much further way to go.
Excellent. There's a nice teaser for you. Yeah, and I likewise won't reveal the details of what I'm writing about, which will be out on Monday as well. But let's just say it's a rollout story, and not a particularly long established company, but a very long established hobby that it's tapping into. So that's as much as I will say. So yeah, very, very exciting. And looking forward to seeing more of the companies that you uncover, David, as we roll out this what's been around for a long time, but is now part of Vox Markets. And if you want to read the reports, you can head over to voxmarkets.co.uk/GCI. Where we'll be publishing more as the months progress, and let's say updates and performance along with them. David, pleasure having you on board, and great speaking to you.
Great stuff. Thanks very much, John.
Thank you.